This evening, I would like to explore together with you a fascinating topic that involves both halacha and history, and looks at how we as Jews apply our age-old Torah principles to the challenges of the modern world, how we view advancements in technology, and our willingness as Jews to accept innovation and change. The Industrial Revolution brought about a dramatic change in the nature of production, in which machines replaced tools, steam and other energy sources replaced human or animal power, and skilled workers were replaced with mostly unskilled workers. All of a sudden, everything is produced in factories. All of a sudden, there's mass production and everything becomes automated. When machine matzah appeared, it sparked a controversy and debate that still rages today. Would machines improve quality, reduce the production costs, and increase the output of matzah? Or do they somehow compromise halacha? In terms of carefulness, remember we're dealing with chametz on Pesach, are humans better than machines? Or does the efficiency of a machine reduce human error? Do matzot used for the mitzvah need to be made by hand, lishma, for the sake of the mitzvah, or can the process be automated? And finally, how willing and open are we to innovation? Do we embrace change? Or do we say, Chadash Asur Min HaTorah? This controversy became a battle of technology versus tradition. And as we shall see this evening, the Machloket became a battle of East versus West. The rabbis of Western and Central Europe being more open to the innovations and changes, and the rabbis of Eastern Europe being zealously opposed. Machine matzah was first introduced in Ribeville, France in 1838 by Isaac Singer. And the first machines were very crude. They basically just flattened and rolled out the dough, like a press. All of the other functions were carried out by hand, the kneading, the cutting, the perforating, the baking. They kept, at first, the traditional circle shape and would cut the matzot by hand with a knife and run the scraps of dough through the machine again for a second run of matzot. The whole process, both runs, took under 6 minutes. Machine matzah would later get its characteristic square shape when, due to pressure, they decided not to keep the scraps from the circles and run them through the machine again, but instead cut squares after the first run. They would eventually install a die into the machine, which would cut the matzot into squares. They would eventually also add a non-stick surface to the machine, a zinc-coated table, as well as a small machine to perforate the matzot. Over time, the process becomes more and more automated. The rabbis in France approved the machine, and it starts to spread across Western and Central Europe, eventually beginning to move east. In 1857, Chaim Nathan Demitzer, who was the Av Beit Din of Krakow, sends a letter to Rav Shlomo Kluger of Brody, one of the leading Gedolei Hador and Gedolei Poskim of that era, and describes this newfangled machine to him and asks him to rule. Rav Shlomo Kluger rules against the machine, and that begins the controversy. By now, some of the leading rabbis of the 19th century get involved in the issue. And so Rav Shlomo Kluger puts together a Sefer Moda'a LeBeit Yisrael, a proclamation to the House of Israel. It's a polemic that he publishes in 1859, Tafresh Yutet, in Breslau, and it features 10 tshuvot. In addition to his own harsh criticisms against machine matzah, it features tshuvot from some of the leading poskim of Eastern Europe, including the Divrei Chaim of Tzanz, Tzanzarov, Rav Chaim Halberstam of Tzanz, Chassidic Rebbe, as well as the Chidushei Harim, the first Gerer Rebbe. And in addition to saying that one may not use machine matzah to fulfill the mitzvah of achilat matzah, some go as far as to say that the machine matzah is chametz and cannot be used the entire week of Pesach. Pretty extreme. As we'll see, they set forth not only halachic concerns, but social and economic concerns as well. That very same year, Rav Yosef Sholnefenson, the Sholom Meshiv, was the Rav in Lvov, Lemberg, and also considered one of the Gedolei Torah, the Gedolei Poskim of the time, published a rebuttal he called it bitul moda'a, a nullification of that proclamation. And his polemic featured 20 tshuvot defending Mishin Matzah, addressing all of the concerns set forth in Moda'a LeBeit Yisrael, and showing how, in fact, Mishin Matzah is superior to hand matzah, for reasons we'll see tonight. In addition to his own defense of Mishin Matzah and support of Mishin Matzah, it included tshuvot of some of the leading poskim of Western and Central Europe, Rav Avram Binyamin Sofer of Presburg, the Ktav Sofer, son of the famous Chatam Sofer. It included tshuva of Rav Yaakov Etlinger, the Aruch Laner, as well as Rav Yisrael Lifshitz, author of the famous Teferet Yisrael, the Perush Yachinu Boaz on the Mishnah. As I mentioned, those who opposed the Mishin Matzah had halachic concerns as well as social and economic concerns. But I'd like to focus on one of the halachic issues tonight together with you. I'd like to examine in depth the issue of intent when it comes to baking matzah. In Parashat Bo, Shemot Yud Bet, Pasuk Yud Zayin, the Torah says, "Ushmartem et ha-matzot, you shall safeguard or watch the matzot, ki be'etzem ha-yom hazeh, for on this very day, Hotzeiti et tzivotechem meretz Mitzrayim, I took you out of Egypt, ushmartem et ha-yom hazeh, ledorotechem chukat olam, and you shall observe this day for generations as an eternal decree." What does it mean to safeguard or watch the matzot? So if you take a look at the Mishnah in the second perek of Masechet Pesachim, it's perek bet, Mishnah hey, the Mishnah enumerates things that may be used for the mitzvah of matzah and things that may not be used for matzah. And at the end of the Mishnah, we're taught chalot todah, the loaves of the Thanksgiving offering, urekike nazir, and the loaves that accompanied the offering of the nazir, asa'an la'atzmo, if they were made for oneself, for the sake of the offering, ein yotzin bahen. You cannot fulfill the mitzvah of achilat matzah through those loaves. Asa'an limkol b'shuk yotzin ba. If you made them to be sold in the market, then one may fulfill the mitzvah of achilat matzah with those loaves. Now the todah, the Thanksgiving offering, consisted of 40 loaves. 10 of those 40 were chametz, were leavened. 30 were, I don't want to call them matzah, and you'll soon see why. You'll understand why I'm not calling them matzah, but let's call them unleavened. 30 unleavened loaves. By the way, because the Korban Todah consisted of some chametz loaves, it wasn't offered on Erev Pesach, and that's why we have the minhag, the custom of not reciting Mizmor L'Todah, the psalm of thanksgiving, on Erev Pesach. The Rekikei Nazir, the loaves that accompanied the offering of the Nazir after his culmination of his Nizirut, after his vow had come to completion, were also unleavened. Again, I'm not calling them matzot, but they were not chametz. So the Mishnah here tells us if they're made or baked for the korban, they cannot be used for the sake of matzah, for the mitzvah of achilat matzah, of eating matzah on the 15th of Nisan. But if they were just made stam, then they may be used. So the Gemara, Andaf Lamed Chet, Amud Aleph, asks the question, what's the source for this prohibition? What's the scriptural source? Menahani Mile. Where are these words found? Amar Rabba, Rabba said, De'amar Kha, as the Pasuk, which we just looked at together, states, Ushmartem et ha-matzot, you shall safeguard or watch the matzot, Matzah ha-mishtameret l'shem matzah. We're talking about matzah that was watched l'shem matzah, for the sake of matzah, which we'll have to define. The Gemara continues, Yatzta zo she'en mishtameret l'shem matzah ela l'shum zevach. It excludes those, chalot todah and k'kei nazir that we saw in the Mishnah, which were not made l'shem matzah, for the sake of matzah, rather they were made l'shum zevach, for the offering, for the korban. How do we define this requirement of the Gemara, that the matzah that is to be eaten for the mitzvah of achilat matzah has to be made l'shem matzah? What type of shmirah are we talking about? So there's machloket rishonim. The Rif and the Rambam explain very simply that ushmartem et ha-matzot, the shmirah, the safeguarding or watch that's required, is to protect the matzah from becoming chametz. But the Chochmei Ashkenaz, Rashi, the Balei HaTosafot, and the Rosh explain that when the Gemara requires matzah to be baked l'shem matzah, it means that it has to be baked with the explicit intent of being used for the mitzvah of achilat matzah. It's a kavanah, an intent. And if you've ever been inside of a matzah factory, you'll see that throughout the process, those baking the matzah and working on the matzah keep repeating, it's almost a mantra, l'shem matzot mitzvah, l'shem matzot mitzvah. They're baking the matzot explicitly for the fulfillment of the mitzvah of achilat matzah. There are other examples in halacha where a chefza shel mitzvah, something that's to be used for the fulfillment of a mitzvah, has to be made lishma. The tviya for tzitzit, the spinning of the wool into thread to be tied for the mitzvah of tzitzit, has to be done lishma. Or the ibud, the tanning of the leather for a sefer Torah, has to be done lishma. L'alacha, we accept both of these definitions of lishma, namely that the matzah, of course, has to be protected from being chametz, but it also requires this additional shmira, this additional level of kavanah, that it be made specifically and explicitly to fulfill the mitzvah of achilat matzah. There's an important discussion, without getting too much into it this evening, as to from what point do we require this shmira? You've probably bought a box of matzah that has printed on the front, Shmura Mishat Ketzira, that it's been protected or safeguarded for the sake of the mitzvah from the time of harvest. There's a debate whether we require Shmira from the time of Ketzira, from the time of Tchina, grinding the wheat, or at the very least from the time of Lisha, when the water is introduced into the flour, from the time of kneading. This, of course, impacts on our conversation this evening as the machines become more and more automated over time. And the major question becomes, is machine matzah baked lishma? Can machines have intent to bake matzah for the sake of the mitzvah? Or is it enough that the one operating the machine have that explicit intent? Rav Shlomo Kluger made the comparison between the machine and one operating the machine to a rich discussion that's found in the Gaonim and the Rishonim concerning whether one may eat matzah baked by a goy, a Gentile, or a cheresh shotev katan, a deaf mute, someone who's mentally unstable, and a katan, a minor. Now, a goy, a Gentile, of course, does not have ne'amanut for kashrut. You can't trust his kashrut. And also, presumably, cannot bake matzah for the sake of the mitzvah. He's not obligated in the mitzvah. Cheresh shotev katan, that's a classic category of three who are not bar dat. They're not held accountable for their actions. They're not formally obligated in the mitzvot. And so therefore, by extension, they cannot bake matzah for the sake of the mitzvah. But what if you have a Jew who is a Bagdat standing over them and ensuring that what they're doing is proper, and perhaps even ensuring that the matzah that they are baking is baked for the sake of the mitzvah of achilat matzah? So the Shiltot of Rav Achai Gaon, and it's this week's parsha, makes sense, parshat Tzav, it's Shilta Ayin Vav, he writes, Goy o cheresh shotev katan, these categories that we spoke of, delav b'nei shimoninhu, because they are not b'nei shimur, they cannot have this proper intent to bake the matzah for the sake of the mitzvah. Ena la shali isa goy cheresh shotev katan. They should not knead the dough, they should not bake the matzah. Afal gav, even though da'afin hu Yisrael bardeya, ve'avid la shimur b'sha'at afiya, lo nafik yidei chovatei. Even if you have a Jew who is a Bardat standing over them and making sure that what they're doing is for the sake of the mitzvah of achilat matzah, that it has the proper shmira, that's not enough, and one does not fulfill the mitzvah of achilat matzah with those matzot. So writes the Shiltot. However, some gonim and rishonim rule that bidiavad, after the fact, one can rely on this type of matzah and use it for the mitzvah. The Ritva, in his Perush, Maseret Psachim Daf Mem Amud Aleph, summarizes this debate and writes, Aval Mori Hara'a Zal, my master, Rabbi Aharon Halevi of Barcelona, Hayadan Lahakel, he ruled leniently, Desagebi Yisrael Omed Al Gabo. in the case where you have a Jew standing over a goy or cheresh shotev katan, delo ba'inan asiya l'shem matzah, rak shimol l'shem matzah. And this is fascinating because the Torah doesn't require asiya l'shem matzah, that the matzah has to be baked or made for the sake of the mitzvah of matzah, rak shimul l'shem matzah. But the Torah only requires safeguarding or watching over. As it is written in the Torah that you shall safeguard the matzot. It doesn't say v'asidem et ha-matzot. So perhaps you could have a Jew watching over a non-Jew or a cheresh shotev katan, and that would be enough shimul. And he continues, kacha yadan mori ha-ra'a zal, this is how my master, the ra'a, ruled, lehalacha velo lema'aseh. Ah, it's only halacha, it's in theory but not in practice. An interesting chidush, but we rule like the shiltot, and this is in the Tur, Orachaim Siman Tafsamach, he writes, Eino sin ha-matzot al yidei goy cheresh shotev katan. And skipping a few lines, the Tur adds something significant to our discussion here. U'balei ma'aseh v'chassidim, men of piety, machmirin al atzmam, ki go'onim ha-machmirin, they are stringent upon themselves, like the great go'onim, the earlier rabbis, v'lashim ba'atzman, ve'ofin. They would knead their own dough, they would bake their own matzot. Kehahidam rinan, as it says in the Gemara, and the Gemara he's referring to is in Masechet Pesachim, where the Gemara defines what lachma anya, what lechem oni, what poor man's bread is, and says, madarko shel oni hu masik v'ishto ofe. The way that a poor man bakes is he has a little fire, he has a little flour, and he bakes at home. He can't afford to go here in Yerushalayim to Angel's Bakery or Berman's Bakery and to buy a nice loaf of bread professionally baked. But instead he bakes it at home, and that of course is a zecher for the matzah that the Jewish people ate in Mitzrayim. Lachen, therefore, mitzvah al kol adam lihishtadel be'asiyat ha-matzot. Therefore, it's incumbent upon each person, it's a mitzvah on each person, to try to be involved in the baking of the matzah themselves. And this was the minhag of my father, my master, the Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher Zal. Hayam ishtadel bahen, the omer al siyatan, he would stand over, he was involved in the mitzvah, he would stand over those baking the matzot, umezareza uskim bahen, and he would make sure those who were baking the matzah did it with alacrity, and were doing it fast, quick, l'shem matzot mitzvah, make sure that they're doing it with the right kavanah. Vayam misayap barivatan, there's another girsa that says barichatan. In other words, the Rosh, my father, the Torah tells us, was involved in the process. So there's something to it, to be involved in the baking process yourself. And this nikuda, this additional point, also becomes important as the machine matzah baking process becomes more and more automated with time. The Shulchan Aruch in Siman Tafsamech rules like the Tur, Ein lashin matzot mitzvah velo ofin uta al yidei eno yehudi velo al yidei cheresh shotev katan. You cannot bake matzot through the work of a non-Jew or a cheresh shotev katan. And as the Mishnah Berura explains, that's even, of course, where you have a Jew standing over. Some rulinli b'diavad, but we assume, like the shiltot, that even in a case where you have a Yisrael that is about that standing over, that's still not acceptable for the sake of the mitzvah. And in Seif Bet, the Shulchan Aruch continues, again, citing the Tur, HaRosh, Rabbeinu Asher, Aya Mishtadel b'matzot mitzvah ve'omed al asiyata. He was involved in the process, he stood over, u'mizarez ha'uskim bahem, u'mesaya ba'richatan. He, again, stood over and was involved and made sure that they worked quickly and that everything was done l'shem matzot mitzvah. V'chein ra'ui l'chol adam la'asot litapel hu ba'atzmo b'mitzvah. And it's proper for each and every person to be involved in the mitzvah of baking matzot. And many people will form a chabura, get a group together, and bake their own matzot to be part of this process. The Mishneh Berurah here in a safe cut in hay adds something. De mitzvah bo yoter mi bishlucho, because it's better to do the mitzvah yourself than have it done by a shaliach, by an agent. This is a famous sugya at the beginning of the second parak of Masechet Kiddushin, where the Gemara discusses the fact that one may be mekadesh and isha, he can marry a woman al yidei shaliach, through a messenger or an agent. Shlucho shel adam kamoto, one's shaliach is just like himself. However, the Gemara concludes that it's not so romantic, but mitzvah bo yotel mi bishlucho, that it's the mitzvah, it's preferable for him to do the mitzvah than to do it through a messenger. And that Gemara is also applied in Masechet Shabbat, where the Gemara says that, for instance, one should be involved in the Shabbat preparations themselves, although they may have someone to do the Shabbat preparations for them, they should still be involved because mitzvah bo, yotel mi bishlucho, it's better for him to do the mitzvah than through a messenger, through a shaliach. And the Gemara, in fact, describes how some of our great chachamim were involved in the Shabbat preparations, the cooking, etc., lichvod Shabbat Kodesh. So there's a value to bake the matzah by hand and to bake it yourself, to roll up your sleeves, to get your hands dirty, and to bake it with the proper intent. And in Saif Katan Zayin, the Mishnah Berurah adds another nekuda, and he writes, V'yatriach atzmo b'matzot mitzvah, that one should become involved, one should work hard, like a tircha, in the baking of the matzot, ad shetchamem v'yazia, until he gets, his body becomes hot and he gets sweaty. V'zet tikkun gadol la'avon hachamur. And he quotes the Arizal, the great mystic, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria Ashkenazi, 16th century Tzfat, that through the heating of the body and the sweating while baking the matzah, one comes to be metaken, to rectify a great sin. And it's referring to a sexual transgression. It's referring to the sin of wasting seed. Now, the fact that there's a mystical component to this is something that we will return to. In Moda'a LeBeit Yisrael, Rav Shlomo Kluger, as I mentioned, makes this comparison between the machine and one operating it to the goy, or Cheresh Shoteh V'Katan, making the matzah, and even when you have a Jew standing over, that's still not enough. And so Rav Shlomo Kluger writes that the machine cannot have shmira, just like a goy, cheresh shoteh v'katan, cannot have shmira, and it's not enough, as we saw, to have Yisrael standing over and making sure that it's done lishma. So the one operating the machine also, it's not enough of a kavanah, it's not enough of a shmira. A machine is not a human being. A machine lacks da'at, intent. A machine lacks koach gavra, human effort. And therefore, he argued, the matzah is not baked lishma. However, those responding in Bitul Moda'a explained that the kneading and baking is really performed by humans, and with human effort, koach gavra, even the rolling is performed by human force. Now, that argument was certainly valid at the time, but as the machine becomes more and more automated, it's really hard to say that there is human effort or koach gavra involved. And then the question becomes, is it enough that the one operating the machine or pushing the button, turning the machine on, has the proper intent and says l'shem matzot mitzvah? Another issue that Rav Shlomo Kluger felt very strongly about was that these new machines and the process becoming more and more automated would take jobs away from the poor who waited all year long to work in the matzah factories. It would take away their livelihood. He goes as far as to say, you're being mevatel, you're destroying the mitzvah of ma'ot chitim, the wheat money that we provide for the poor before Pesach. Those in favor of the machines countered and said, well, first of all, poor workers that work in the factories are untrained, they're not careful, and that compromises kashrut. But they also added that we can look for alternatives in providing for the poor. And actually, and this makes a lot of sense, the efficiency of the machine matzah, the greater output, equals a greater opportunity to feed the poor. In fact, there was a letter that was published in the Jewish Chronicle of London in 1853, 6 years before Moda'a LeBeit Yisrael and Bitul Moda were published, which basically begs the communal leaders to bring these new machines to England so that they be able to produce a lot of matzot to feed the poor. Another argument that was set forth was that cleaning the machine is difficult, and the dough, the crumbs can get deep inside the machine, it can become chametz. And they answered in Bitul Moda that no, the machine is even easier to clean than manual baking tools. It consists of large parts that are easy to clean. I mentioned they eventually added a zinc coating, which is a nonstick surface. And those in favor of machine matzah say, actually, the machines reduce human error. Now remember, the same ingredients that go into making matzah also go into making chametz. And you're playing with fire here. Now, if you've ever been inside of a matzah factory, you see the balagan there, you see the craziness that goes on. And I'm talking about a matzah factory that makes handmade matzot. So as I'll talk about a little bit later on this evening, there were poskim back then, and there are poskim today that feel that machine matzah is superior because of the efficiency and because it reduces human error. There was a concern that the machines would get hot and cause chametz, and the answer, no, the machine remains cool. There was a concern that the remains of the first batch are reused. So the answer, no, the dough is handled without stopping. But eventually, as I mentioned, they made concessions and would only run through once. There was also concern about how they would actually bake the matzah, baking it in a tray. And they argued, well, you know, if you argue that you can't bake it in a tray, then obviously you haven't seen the machine. It uses no trays. And that really brings up a major problem, that most of the opposition, if not all of the opposition, never saw the machines. And so they argued in Bitul Moda'a that if you haven't seen the machine and you're just relying on a report, you are not qualified to render a psak. You're not qualified to rule against it. And of course, this brings up a fundamental question. How much of information, how much of the mitziyut does a posek need to know? Is it sufficient to rely merely on reports, or must a posek investigate not just the halacha, but the mitziyut of the situation? They were concerned, and this is interesting, this is somewhat funny, that the square matzot are similar, lahavdil, to the wafers given out in church. So the Stechemed answers, this is, he's answering it a little bit later on, this is not in the Bitul Moda'a, but the Stechemed writes that, well, you know, we see that we learn halachot related to the thickness of the matzah from the Lechem HaPanim, so why not the shape? What's the problem with the shape? The Lechem HaPanim was also square. So if we learn about the thickness of the matzah from Lechem HaPanim, why can't we also use the shape of the Lechem HaPanim, which was square or rectangle? Which is an interesting approach. And, you know, it also really brings up a point that what we're not used to, what we didn't grow up with, we're very hesitant to accept. So if your whole life you grew up with round matzot, and then all of a sudden you're presented with a square matzah, something as benign as the shape can upset you and cause concern. And the last thing I'd like to mention is that in Moda'a LeBeit Yisrael, they set forth the argument that German Jews incline towards innovation, innovations which our forefathers did not conceive and are not to be invented. And you have to appreciate the Enlightenment, the Haskalah, the Reform movement in the background here. That this machloket wasn't just about halacha, but the rabbis of Eastern Europe saw the winds of change shifting, and they saw a dramatic change because of the Haskalah and the Reform movement. And they were afraid of change, therefore. They were afraid of the slippery slope. However, the rabbis, even though they were from Germany and from Western and Central Europe, they were also Yirei Shamayim, they were poskim. And they felt that this is not a change that is unacceptable, but this is a change that's actually positive. And they countered and said, no, we too are Yirei Shamayim. We too are stringent in our religious observance, but we feel that new technologies can be utilized. And this brings up, again, a fundamental question of how we as Jews engage the modern world and its challenges? And are we willing to accept innovations and changes? And which innovations and changes? Rav Chaim Halberstam of Tzanz, the Tzanz Rov, the Divrei Chaim, lived from 1793 to 1876 and was really a great Hasidic master and a firebrand. He wrote a tshuva as part of the Moda'a LeBeit Yisrael, which was subsequently published in his own collection of Tshuvot, She'elot Tshuvot Divrei Chaim. And this can be found in Orach Chaim Chelak Aleph, Siman Chof. And he prohibits the machine matzah, goes as far as to say that it is chametz gamul, it is chametz completely, but he doesn't give us a reason why. And he writes the following. He says, I believe that in these types of areas, shevekamot ele advarim, these types of issues, ein legalot hata'am, it's not worth revealing the reason, rak lifsok adin behechlet, but rather rule with certitude, with conviction, vashomea yishma, and those who listen will listen, etc. V'lachen baderech hechlet omer lachem, and therefore I'm telling you with certitude, ki ha'oseh matzot al kli zeh, anyone who makes matzot on this vessel, on this utensil, with this machine, hu chametz gamur, it is chametz, wow. So it's open to speculation why he felt the way he did, but I think certainly we have to appreciate the haskalah, the enlightenment, the reform movement in the background here, and the fear that sometimes we are motivated by fear. In addition, I think that perhaps what could be motivating the Divrei Chaim is that in Chassidut, there's so much emphasis on the Kavanah, the intent, and of course on mysticism. And as we saw in the Mishnah Brura, in the name of the Arizal, that baking the matzot and sweating and heating up the body is a tikkun for a very serious sin. And so there's this whole mystical component. And in Chassidut, you know, it's all about the intent and the kavanah and doing it yourself. And in fact, in Chassidut, baking matzah is very ceremonial. If you look in the Hasidic newspapers before Pesach, you'll find pictures of all the admorim, the rebbes, wearing their streimlach and their fancy bekishes when they go out to draw the water, and really throughout the whole process of the baking, which they do themselves. They'll go out and they'll draw the water. Now, the halacha requires that the mayim be mayim shelanu, water that has linat laila, water that gets to sit and cool overnight before you introduce it into the flour to make matzot. But there's sort of this double entendre that mayim shelanu also becomes our water, water that we drew, again, with all sorts of mystical intentions and kavanot and this whole ceremony and pomp and ceremony and pomp and circumstance. And then you see the pictures of the Rebbe is grinding the wheat into flour and baking the matzot l'shem, matzot mitzvah, for the sake of the mitzvah. But it's more than just the shmirah that we're talking about, you know, the intent to bake matzah, to fulfill the mitzvah v'chilat matzah. It's imbued with this almost mystical component, these kavanot. And in fact, people will pay a hefty price to get matzah from the chabura of a great rabbi, a great rebbe, because it's, you know, they feel that it's imbued with this kiddusha, with this kavanah. So I think perhaps that's another way we can understand the Divrei Chaim. And we also find that the Avnei Nezer, who was also a Chassidic Rebbe, Rabbi Avraham of Sokotchev, he also wrote the Egle Tal, he was very unique in that he was a major Talmid Chacham. And sometimes, in fact, he would rule against what was common Hasidic practice, and would say, you know what, I'm doing what I feel the halacha requires. Let them say that I'm not a rebbe. Let them, you know, call me, a litvak. And he writes in 1895, this is, you know, almost 40 years later, against machine matzot, and he says in his tshuva, he's very open about it. He says, I haven't seen the machines. But again, we can appreciate, if we understand that kavanah, intent, is so important in Hasidut, we can appreciate why the Avnei Nezer as well would rule against machine matzah. Almost 50 years from the original machloket, the controversy reaches the shores of pre-state Israel. And in 1908, a poster war begins here in Jerusalem. You know, in Jerusalem, the preferred media is the pashkevilim, the posters that you find plastered everywhere. So in Europe, they had published Moda'a Lebeit Yisrael and Bitul Moda'a. In Yerushalayim, all you need are those posters castigating anyone who doesn't agree with you. In fact, they say that if you would take down those posters, then the walls of Jerusalem would fall down, those old buildings, which could be true. And what was interesting is that you had the Hasidim, of course, against the Mishim Matzah, but the Prushim, the students of the Gaon Mivilna, the Talmidei Hagra, they were for Mishim Matzah for the reasons we saw. They felt that it reduced human error, and the efficiency of the machine was preferable. Again, we're dealing with chametz. You know, a real brisker wouldn't eat a lot of matzah on Pesach. They would eat matzah for the sake of the mitzvah, a very burnt piece of matzah to make sure that it's completely cooked. But they wouldn't eat a lot of matzah. You don't have to eat matzah the rest of the week. It says the Gemara, it's a reshut, it's not a chovah. Because the concern is that the matzah that you're eating may actually, in fact, be chametz. Again, the same ingredients that go into baking matzah go into making chametz. And if you've ever been inside of a matzah factory, it's a balagan. It's pretty crazy. In fact, as a child, we used to go to the Seder by a family friend, Rabbi Leon Moseson, alav shalom. And he was a Talmid of the Rav, of Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Zatzal, and Rabbi Moseson, in fact, studied with the Rav Nishik University, and he taught at Maimonides in Boston for many years. I knew him as a rabbi of Shari Tzedek in West New York, New Jersey. I had a very good friend growing up who lived in a neighboring town, West New York. It's right by the Lincoln Tunnel. And so we used to go to help make the minyan. And when Rabbi Moseson retired, he moved to Passaic, where I lived growing up. And so we spent a number of sedarim with he and his wife, also Alea Shalom. And I remember the first year we got there, and all he had was the machine matzah. He had Streitz machine shmura. He went down to the factory, got it himself, the special shmura run of Streitz. The Rav's brother, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal, used to give the ashkacha to Streitz. And I remember being disappointed because growing up, I loved the handmade, big, round, crunchy matzot. And I was a little disappointed. So the next year I said to my father, you know, let's bring a handmade shmura with us this year. And we did. Oh, and Rabbi Moseson was so upset, and he didn't want us to open it up. He felt that it, for sure, it's chavetz, and he didn't want the handmade. So, you know, as I'll return to, there were those who preferred machine, and still do prefer machine, because they feel that it reduces human error. In fact, he told my father, next year, please, don't bring that into my home. You know, it's been said that if you eat machine matzah, it's a safek, it's a doubt, it's a question whether you can fulfill the mitzvah or not. But if you eat hand matzah, it's a vada, it's certainly chametz. That's said tongue-in-cheek, it's not to be taken literally. But there is that concern that that handmade matzah, you know, mistakes might happen along the process. Whereas with machines, it reduces that human error. They're much more efficient. There's a fascinating passage in the work Magen Avot by the Meiri, Menachem HaMeiri, who was one of the great Rishonim, lived in 13th century Provence, and he describes in Ha'inyan HaShisha Asar something called an amla, which sounds a lot like the early machines used to bake matzah, some sort of press that they would use in his area, that was the minhag there to be used for matzah. And it's on this work that we have an interesting line or a couple of lines from a peculiar or interesting personality, Rabbi Shlomo Aaron Wertheimer. He was a Hungarian rabbi. He was a scholar. He was living in Jerusalem in the late 19th century, early 20th century. And he was a bookseller and a bibliophile. He was an expert on Kitvei Yad. In fact, in the 1890s, he lived in Cairo and went through the Cairo Geniza, collecting and publishing manuscripts and fragments. So on this passage of the Meiri's Magen Avot, where the Meiri describes this Amla, he writes something to the effect of, you know, had only Levi, had only the great rabbis of Galicia, of Eastern Europe, who shook the world against the machine-made matzah, you know, 50 years ago, and also in our time in the Holy City of Jerusalem last year, had they only seen this passage of the Meiri, and this is, he writes in his glosses to this work, Magen Avot, he said, you know, had the Meiri only come out with this book just for this little passage, you know, to remove all objections, then, you know, it would have been enough. So that's pretty powerful. And I think that, you know, you can argue, well, what's the difference really between a machine doing the work, being operated by a person? And again, we're talking about the early machines that caused this whole machloket to begin with, and a rolling pin. Is there really so much difference between the early machines, which were just a press and just rolled out the dough, versus a rolling pin? Now, as things become more and more automated, and today the process is completely automated, from the grinding of the wheat into flour, through the kneading of the dough, through the baking, etc., packaging, it's all automated. But at least, you know, the initial machloket, if you understood what was going on, is the press that was flattening out the dough really any different than a rolling pin? I mean, does matzah have to be made with your actual fingers? So, just an interesting question. But what I'd like to conclude with tonight is to show you that over time, machine matzah gains acceptance. For those of us who grew up in the U.S., when you think of machine matzah, you think of course, Manischewitz. Rabbi Dov Ber Manischewitz emigrated to the U.S. in 1886. He served a short stint as a shochet and founded the Manischewitz Matzah Company in 1888 in Cincinnati, Ohio. He single-handedly revolutionized matzah baking. At one point, he held over 50 patents, and everything from start to finish became automated. Now, there's a fascinating piece of history, a wonderful historical document that I'd like to call your attention to. It's the March 1938 special edition of the Torah journal Hapardes. Hapardes is probably the oldest Torah journal that's still in print today. It was founded in Warsaw, Poland in 1913 and moved to Chicago in 1925. And in March of 1938, they had a special edition, a supplement, celebrating 50 years of the Manischewitz Matzah Company. In that supplement, there is a letter testifying to the kashrut, to the reliability, to the superiority, really, of Manischewitz matzah. And you have several pages of signatures of some of the leading rabbis of the time. Rabbis from North America, rabbis from Europe, and rabbis from Eretz Yisrael. Among them, you have Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook. You have Rav Meir Shapiro of Lublin, of Yeshivas Chochmei Lublin, the founder of the Daf Yomi movement, of course. You have Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was the Rav Yerushalayim, Rav Yaakov Moshe Charlap, who was a very close Talmid of Rav Kook and subsequently took over the yeshiva after Rav Kook's Ptira. You have Rav Ruven Katz of Petach Tikva, Rabbi Eliezer Silver of Cincinnati, Ohio, who I've heard would frequent the Cincinnati factory of Manischewitz and insist that the one operating the machine push the button and say, of course, L'shem Matzot Mitzvah. You have many other leading rabbis, including Chassidus Rebbeim, including Halberstams from Galicia, most likely relatives of the Divrei Chaim, descendants of the Divrei Chaim, endorsing Manischewitz Matzah. So what's fascinating is that 100 years, almost to the day, of the appearance of the machine matzah in France in 1838. Here you have, in 1938, over 100 of the leading rabbis in the world, Europe and Eretz Israel and North America, endorsing the machine matzah. Now, I don't know if all of them believe that it should be used for the first night or outside of Eretz Israel for the first two nights for the mitzvah of achilat matzah. However, certainly it became accepted, and that's what this wonderful document attests to. While many accept machine matzah as kasher, you still have poskim that insist that the matzah eaten at the seder for the sake of achilat matzah, the mitzvah of achilat matzah, be made by hand. And you have a tshuva of Rav Yosef in Yechavedat, Chelek Aleph Siman Yudalet, and Kidako Bakodesh in his own inimitable style. He gives a full treatment of the issue. He quotes all of the sources, and he writes, Lefi Zen, he's talking about the issue of Shmira, as we saw, the issue that it has to be made Lishma. He says, therefore, Nire She'en Yotzi Nidei Chovat Achilat Matzah B'Laila HaRishon Shel Pesach B'Matzot Mechuna. He says, it appears that you cannot fulfill the obligation of eating matzah on the first night through machine matzah. Mipnei She'Maaseh HaLisha V'Aricha V'Afiyah HaKol Na'aseh Be'Ofen Otomati V'Lo Al-Yedei Koach Adam Yisrael Shemuchoyav B'Mitzvot. It's all done today with this automatic process, an automated process, and it's not done by hand. He even talks about Koach Gavra and Koach Rishon, Koach Sheni. And he continues, V'arei ze dome l'maase shel cheres shoteh v'katan. This is similar to what we saw with a non-Jew or a cheres shoteh v'katan, a deaf mute, a mentally unstable person, a minor. She'en behem dat. They don't have dat, they don't have intent. V'eina mechuyavim b'mitzvot. And they're not obligated in mitzvot. V'chein pasak gaon Rabbi Shlomo Kluger b'tshuva. And I'm skipping down to the bottom here of this tshuva. As I mentioned, he also gets into the issue of koach gavra, how much human effort one requires or is needed here. And certainly today, with the process being completely automated, you can't say that there's really too much human effort being expended. He writes, however, ubishata dechak, that in an emergency, she'eno motzei matzah shel avodat yad, you cannot find handmade matzah that was done by those who have fear of heaven. It appears sheyesh li smoch al svarazo. Let's say today chova b'matzot mechona hashmura mishat kitzira. You can fulfill, because he quotes the lenient opinions or the opinions that say that you can fulfill the mitzvah through machine matzah. So you know, if you're in such a situation, Rav Avadia Yosef rules that you may use machine matzah as long as it's mishat, as long as it's as shmura mishat kitzira, that it's shmura machine matzah. You see that there are different types of machine matzah on the market. Ve'af yachol, he continues, levarech alea asher kidishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al achilat matzah. And you can even make a bracha on it. In other words, you know, according to some, this is a fake, and that's why he rules that really you shouldn't use machine matzah, because it's a fake, it's a doubt whether you can fulfill the mitzvah or not. However, he says that in such a circumstance, you can rely on the lenient position and even make a bracha. And finally, I'm skipping all the way down to the very end of his tshuva, the last few lines. Mikol makom, nevertheless, mitzvah min ha-muvchar lishtadel la-sig matzah shmura shel avodat yad, shenaset bidei anashim yirei shemayim habakim ba'alacha. Nevertheless, one should try to do their best to find matzah shmura that's made by hand by reputable Jews who have the fear of heaven, who are experts in halacha, latzed ba yidei chovat matzah b'layla rishon l'chol adeot, in order to fulfill the mitzvah in accordance with all of the positions. Ulam b'yedei yom echag, but for the rest of the holiday, gam mi she'ochel matzah shmura, even those who are stringent to eat only matzah shmura, in accordance with the opinion of the Rambam and the Gaon Mivilna, Rashai lakel, it's acceptable to be lenient, lechol matzot mechona hakshira lepesach. You can eat regular machine matzah, presumably, because that has enough shmira for the rest of the week. So, there are poskim that still to this day insist that the mitzvah be fulfilled through handmade shmura matzah. certainly the Hasidim, for the reasons we saw. But as I mentioned, the practice of the Rav, Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, his brother of Aaron Soloveitchik, who gave the Hashgachat to Straits, was to eat machine matzah. They felt that it was preferable. In fact, there's a discussion as to what the position of Maran HaRav Kook was. And Neria Gutel has written a number of articles about it. But if you look in the Igrot HaRi'iyah, the letters of Rav Kook, in Chelek Gimel, Siman Taf Taf Ted Zion, this was when Rav Kook was living in London. And he writes to his son, HaRav Tzvi Yudah, and writes that that he hopes that they're starting to bring in the matzah where he is, and he hopes that they're going to bring in the matzah from Manischewitz. And there in the footnote, Rav Tzvi Yudah adds that Manischewitz is the Beit HaChagoshet HaGadol, the large factory, umehudar bekashrut beAmerika, which is known for its reliability in kashrut. According to many of their students, both Maran HaRav of Kook, as well as his son, Rav Tzvi Yudah, preferred machine matzah. And in Moadei HaRi'iyah, where HaRav Neria describes Rav Kook's attitudes towards the holidays and a lot of his Divrei Torah with regards to the Moadim, festivals, etc., describes there how HaRav Kook would go to the Cohen Halpern machine matzah factory here in Yerushalayim, and however he would operate the machines and move the gears by himself, whatever that means. So you see that perhaps even Maran HaRav was concerned with the issue of koach gavra. In conclusion, both machine matzah and hand matzah have their advantages and disadvantages, as we've seen this evening. Wishing everyone a chag kasher v'sameach. Thank you very much.